This is straight out of Crumpton with your host Greg Crumpton.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Straight Out of Crumpton. I'm Greg Crumpton, your HVAC and skilled trades guru of the day. That's kind of a big title, but I gave it to myself, and I'll go with it. Today, we have somebody special on here. As you know, we love our Canadian friends, and we have another Canadian with us today. Jennifer is joining us today, Jennifer Green, and she is the Director of Competitions and Business Development for Skills Ontario. I got familiar with these folks through Jamie McMillan and Dee Durant, two of my Canadian friends who are in the trades. And I was just following along with what they were doing. And I wound up meeting Jennifer online. And she does some stuff that is interesting and very helpful for our future. So thought we would bring Jennifer on and have a chat today and talk about the future of skilled trades and how she and her organization are trying to foster creating more awareness around the trade. So without further ado, Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Hey, Greg, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, you know, I know that I screwed our schedule up like 9 times, so I'm so glad that we finally got this done. It's been a great, busy time, and I know you're busy, so I appreciate you taking some time out with us today. But tell us a little bit about you, what you do, and why you do it.
So my background is a little different. I was originally going into forensic criminology 20 years ago as a high school student and had the opportunity to do a co-op in high school. I had no idea what cooperative education was, wasn't sure what I would do, but I wanted to try it. Now, I'm actually fourth generation skilled tradesperson. My dad is a tool and die maker. All my uncles are in the skilled trades. My grandpa, my great grandfather. I even went to my father to grade 9 take your kid to work day, chamfering dies all day in his tool and die shop. But none of that was pitched to me as a career option. I was an A-plus student. I already had my path picked out. I was going to do advanced courses and apply to university early. But when that co-op opportunity arose, I thought, hey, like maybe I should try something different. I should try something. Because I was taking tech classes all along and I loved them, but was doing them as a bird course to get my grades up even higher for my university application. But I went down to guidance. In our college course guide, I went to Conestoga College. I read through all the descriptions of the skilled trades program and landed on industrial mechanic millwright. The description sounded just like me. And I thought, what the heck? You know what? I'm working my butt off. I'm going to go take a break and go have, for lack of a term, fun. And I'm going to go do this co-op. Well, it changed my entire career trajectory. It changed everything. I ended up loving it so much that I changed my entire career plans as a grade 11 student and applied for the Ontario Youth Apprenticeship Program, short form. Oh, yep. So in Ontario, you can become a registered apprentice while still in high school, earning hours towards your apprenticeship and earning credits towards completing your OSSD, the Ontario Secondary School Diploma. So it's, talk about like multiple, like it's not just two stones, one bird. It is a lot of stones. You're completing a lot of things at once. And I was accepted. I ended up becoming a registered apprentice as a grade 12 student. So every hour that I worked in grade 12 went towards completing my apprenticeship. My apprenticeship for industrial millwright is 8,000 hours of hands-on work. That's a lot. That's like 4 years worth at a normal work week. I ended up graduating, had a job, already had hours under my belt, started right away at Conestoga College, where I did the day release program. So I went to school one day a week for 3 years while working on the job, gaining hands-on experience. And it allowed me to get my license by the age of 21. So I was a licensed Red Seal industrial mechanic millwright at the age of 21. And I've been advocating for skilled trades and women in skilled trades ever since. I stood out like a sore thumb. I was the first woman in my entire school board to ever be accepted into the OEAP program. And from there on, it just snowballed. And I was always the first woman here and the first woman there and the first woman doing this in skilled trades. But you also throw in at the time when I started in co-op, I was 16. by the time I got my license, I was 21. So not only did I stand out like a sore thumb as far as my gender, but there was also a massive age gap and generational gap, especially in learning and training. So there was a lot of different factors that snowballed into this uniqueness. And I say that because there was no social media 20 years ago. There were no podcasts. There was no connecting through LinkedIn and meeting counterparts like us from Canada and the States. It was try to get invited to whatever you can, and you handed out physical business cards. And that was the only real opportunity outside of email and phone calls. So it's come along in a different way. And even how I got started, because you see so many women advocating for women in trades now, and the atmosphere has blown up in a fantastic way in the promotion of skilled trades, which has been desperately needed for this skills gap for a very long time, like hundreds of thousands of workers needed, especially in construction. So there's a lot of people within this space, and it's really great to see that difference from when I started, from when Jamie McMillan started, at where we are at within that promotion. And I've used the word already a few times, but snowballed. It really snowballed and snowballed and snowballed. I always said yes. I never said no. And I tried to pick up as many different opportunities as I could. So obviously there's a lot of stuff in between there. But in my job now, I've come full circle with this organization. I was originally a volunteer. This organization picked me up in grade 12 to do a keynote. I ended up competing as a competitor in the Skills Ontario Provincial Competition. I also continued on to the Skills Canada National Competition, and now I'm an employee. So it's really come full circle, and my passion and dedication within this role and for this organization really comes from that. I know what these opportunities for youth and in-skilled trades do in the economy for our province and for our country and more, because I know what it did for me. I know how it excelled my career. I know how it earned me respect. I know how this competition changed my life. I've heard many others say this as well, including like some of our board members. I hear it from alumni, how it has changed their life. So the fact that I get to operate and manage with my team Canada's largest skilled trade event is really something that I take a lot of pride in. Because I know what it can do for the students. I know what it can do for the teachers, for our economy and more.
Okay, I think that should wrap this up because I don't know how you could. That is a freaking awesome story. God, there's so many things in there, Jennifer. I can associate with a bit of it because I too started early in the trades. I too went to school at a technical way in high school, but I was always the youngest. So what I was lacking and probably the most challenging for you was the gender problem. You know, I'm a guy, so I was expected or not expected, but, you know, normalized to be in the trades. You know, I'm second generation guy, what have you. And yeah, I did some cool stuff early and young, but I wasn't uphill battling like you have in your life as a female in the trades. And I applaud you for doing that. I have gone through apprenticeship with some ladies that went through. Our company has women now that are journey people in HVAC and plumbing, pipe fitting, ductwork, sheet metal, you know, control. So we have a sprinkling of women throughout our organization working in the field. Not near enough, you know, and when I say not near enough in ratio to what we could have or what we will have going forward, because it is becoming much more, I don't want to say normal, but accepted and hopefully expected later, because it shouldn't be any more weird for a girl to go into the trades than a guy. You know what I mean? It should just be an option for anyone.
Well, there's a lot of strides being made. I mean, our government just passed the workers' Workers for Working Act 5, I believe it's called, with it has a lot of changes and mandates. Our ministries have advanced proper washroom facilities for women on construction sites and PPE, personal protective equipment. So there's quite a few strides that are being done, which also includes, I was chair of a committee of advisors to the former Minister of Labor in Ontario, and we were part of a group of advisors for change in skilled trades, especially for youth. We were on a 9-month appointment, and our final report yielded $90 million over 3 years. It's taken a few years, but many of our recommendations have come out of that. One of them that I am the most proud of, and it wasn't just our committee, like obviously there's a lot more people involved in making this happen, and it was an idea well before we met with stakeholders, was this September, 2024, the Ontario curriculum launched the reintroduction of mandatory grade 9 and 10 technology. So every student, no matter what career path background they're going down, all take it in grade 9 or 10 now. So it not only opens the door and normalizes skilled trades, but it also just helps our next generation in general. Yeah. Hang a picture. Change a light bulb. So it's there to help for a multitude of different reasons. But our recommendations also talked about childcare. It talked about PA days for guidance educators to learn about skilled trades. There was a multitude of different opportunities within that to be able to enhance the system. And I mean, when I started, there were no women in trade support groups. Today across Canada, there's over 30. And wow. Across North America. So there's quite a few. And same thing, I mean, like, you talked about some of the struggles. I mean, like, not only was I pretty much always the only, but the first woman in every department, everywhere I went, but there was also a struggle with personal protective equipment. I never had a full wrist harness that ever fit me properly. My coveralls and my clothes never fit properly. With my first child, there was no maternity workwear whatsoever, and that was in a factory. And there are at least 4 or 5 women's workwear and PPE groups that I'm aware of that make maternity wear now, which goes as far as Australia. There's a couple of really great groups and workwear over there for women in trades. So there's quite a lot of strides occurring, and we're getting there. I'm always surprised to see what still occurs to some women, being like 10, 20 years later after coming off the tools, but there are a ridiculous amount of strides moving forward to help close those gaps and normalize that.
Well, it's exciting to see. I mean, you think about it, we've, as a industry, plural industries, we've excluded half of our potential workforce forever, you know, because we just didn't welcome women into the businesses or to the trades. And I don't even think it was intentional originally, you know, it's just what it was. And it just kind of evolved. And then finally people woke up and said, hey, what the heck are we doing? So I'm excited by it. I think that the women that I know that are in the industry do it really well. And I think that we're fortunate to have more women in the industries, and especially in the HVAC industry, which is, you know, my passion. Our company, we now have a women in HVAC group, a peer group within our company. And we've got about 200 women that are active in that group. So it's really cool to see more involvement, more curiosity, you know, rather than, and this can be women from our company that aren't in the field even, just women who are involved in running the organization, being able to dive deeper into the trades and understanding, you know, the difference between what all our different skills do. Because under the HVAC umbrella, you know, there's a gabillion different little jobs, and understanding how wide the HVAC umbrella is kind of, if you're not immersed in it, you may not know. So if you come to work for one of our companies and think, okay, HVAC, and the first thing you think of is crawling in someone's attic, you know, we do like 9,000 other things and that. So it's just a cool way to gain exposure for more people.
Well, there's you just made a really good point for one of the comments that I said, that I'm well aware of more than 30 different women's support groups in trades now. Two of them are actually women in HVAC-R, one in the States, and then there's Women in HVAC Canada. So like those are two groups that are very trade specific. And then there's a lot of them that are industry specific, like Women in Renewable Energies, which is well beyond skilled trades. So there's quite a few different support groups for that. Within the competition that my team and I operate, we actually have an HVAC contest and a refrigeration contest at both the secondary and the post-secondary level. So post-secondary meaning college up here and secondary meaning grade 9 to 12.
You know, I was up there in the spring at a competition. I met Jamie up there, actually. I can't remember which group it was for, but it was in a hockey arena. It was so cool to see all the different stations set up. And what they were doing that day, Jennifer, they would bring in high schoolers and they would take them around to these different stations. So you had a sheet metal workers, you had a plumbers, you had an electrical. And it was nothing more than getting kids, you know, just exposed to all the different trades that are available. It wasn't like a big hands-on event. It was just more of an awareness thing. You know, it made me think. I know a guy who teaches at a union trade school. We were talking, I don't know, a few months ago, and he said, you know, times have changed with our younger generation in a couple of ways, because we were talking about teaching different generations of workers. You know, in a tech school, you may have an 18-year-old, and you may have a 48-year-old that are taking the same curriculum because the 18-year-old is just getting started. The 48-year-old is changing careers. And just understanding the nuances about teaching the different generations. And I said, what do you feel like has changed mostly with the younger generation? And it was exposure because, you know, when I was a kid and when I was a younger adult, more people did stuff around their houses, you know, DIY projects and what have you. And so a lot more kids were exposed, even if they weren't doing the work, to work. And even to basic tools, like the difference between a flathead and a Phillips head screwdriver. Well, you kind of knew that as somebody growing up in my generation. But in the kid across the street from me, who his parents are not, you know, prone to get out and do a project around the house. No. That youngster would call those two screwdrivers, check this out, a plus and a minus because of the tip. And I never thought about how he was explaining it. So on the first day of class, they don't talk about, okay, go get me a Phillips head and I'll show you how to do this. It's let me show you the different types of hand tools. You know, so it's back one more step, for awareness.
We actually held, during the pandemic, we actually held a Guinness World Record for women in trades. And it was an online video chain, but it also came with an educational guide. And it was actually about screwdrivers and teaching about different tools and different nicknames that they have and like what they're used for. I mean, fun fact, did you know that the Robertson screwdriver is actually invented by a Canadian? And when I'm saying Robertson in comparison to our nicknames for tools, it's the one that's the square.
All those nuggets we need to know so we can win trivia games and put them to use. So, all right.
Yeah, Booth.
Tell me about the director of competitions and business development. What do you do? Like, what is the core function you are doing for the group, for your company?
Our event, the Skills Ontario competition, is the flagship event of our entire organization. We are a not-for-profit. We're dedicated to promoting skilled trades and technologies to youth. And some of our other departments are, we have a Women in Trades department. We have a Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion department. It includes programming for persons of color, persons with disabilities, Black youth, newcomers. We also have a First Nation, Métis, and Inuit department. We have a trades and tech truck. We have summer camps. You name it, we pretty much have it. But my department, we are known as the flagship event. So I noted that we are Canada's largest skilled trades event. We are a competition at the heart of it. We run over 75 different contests in skilled trades and technologies and essential skills. As I noted, we run for post-secondary and secondary, but we also run contests going all the way down to grassroots. We actually also offer a few contests for grades 4 to 6 and 7 to 8 that are related to skilled trades. So construction, technology, we have Lego robotics, Lego engineering. We also have some that focus on safety that are actually called workplace safety. That's at the heart of it. But then we also operate with career exploration showcase booths. So we have over 210 booths operated over 70 vendors. Each one has a mandatory hands-on exploratory component related to a skilled trade, technology, or sector. With that, we bring in 47,000 spectators over 2 days at the Toronto Congress Center. We're the first Monday and Tuesday every May. So for next year, we are Monday, May 5th and 6th, 2025 at the Toronto Congress Center. With that, though, we also operate 6 conferences in conjunction with that. So we also operate Canada's largest Women in Trades conference for youth. We bring in over 2,000 young women. We host one for grades 7 and 8, 9 through 12, and a fully separate Francophone conference, as we have 12 Francophone school boards and 2 Francophone colleges here in Ontario with a large Francophone community.
I gotta ask, I don't know what Francophone is.
So French school boards, French schools, we are a bilingual organization. I speak very little French. I got myself through France at WorldSkills, so I'm proud enough of that. But yes, we do have a large Francophone community here in Ontario. And so we make sure that we offer opportunities for all within the province.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. So at the event, we also host elementary workshops for grades 7 and 8. So a class can sign up and participate in 2 40-minute hands-on workshops right on the contest sites. We also host an entrepreneur skilled trades event, as well as a guidance educator conference for skilled trades. So all of that is held within a 2-day period. That is the majority of what my job is, operating that with my team. And I say team because we are a family. It is quite nitty gritty, and it can be stressful, and we get into a lot of details, and we operate. So the nickname for my skilled trade is Jack of all trades. That is definitely my department. We do everything from trucking to warehousing. We do risk assessment to risk management. We are volunteer management. We are coordinators. We are event planning. Like, you name it. Like, we made a list the one day, and there was like over 20 different titles of like what our department does in putting this event together. So that's the bread and butter. That's the main breadth of my role. But my role also operates in working with the national office. I operate and run Team Ontario. So the gold medalists from select contests continue on to the national level and compete as part of Team Ontario. Every other year, we're actually part of a worldwide organization called World Skills International. Think of it exactly like the Olympics, except instead of operating every 4 years, it operates every 2 years. So competitors who win gold at the national level in select contests actually qualify to make World Skills Team Canada and will be able to travel. I actually just got back from France, from World Skills France, where we had 3 Ontario competitors on Team Canada competing against gold medalists from across the entire world. They have over 87 member countries involved.
That is so cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So as far as in the States, there is a Skills USA, yeah. And many of the states have it. The exact same program. I actually met the welder, and I forget what the other competitor was, from the U.S. actually at World Skills. I just happened to be walking behind them, and I was like, hey, USA, it's nice to have that at-home feeling when you're surrounded by how many different languages. Right. So I was able to have a good conversation with them when we were walking through the aisleways. So my role also looks after those components. My department also operates what we call junk drawer races. So they are competitions that are 100% tied to curriculum, that incorporate lesson plans tied to curriculum for teachers, that they can operate in their classroom with their students in teams of 4, and then they can submit virtually. So they can compete against other students from across the province by submitting their projects virtually. They get judged, winners from regionals are announced, and then they get to go on to championships and compete really now across the province. So our department operates that, as well as the qualifying competitions. So for four contests that are the most popular at the secondary level. We hold a qualifying round to determine who actually goes to our big provincial round. So including all of, like, the actual, like, behind the scenes, like, director stuff of everything from budgets to strap plans to you name it, that comes with any role. But the bread and butter is the competition piece.
Well, so what you just told us over the last 2 minutes and 47 seconds about what you do is, I mean, that sounds like it would take a big team, but I bet you it's not a big team. I bet y'all all work your tails off with doing more than you probably outkick your coverage often.
We are a department of four.
Wow.
The stakeholder department is a department of three at this time, and they operate the showcase booths and obviously the sponsorship, and they handle the money side of things. But then we also have the department for young women and for First Nation, Métis, and Inuit. So all those individual departments operate those conferences. But to run this operation, we actually take almost 900 volunteers to be able to operate all of that. And that's everything from chairs of committees to judges, to marshals, lunch distributors, you name it. And it takes about 900 to be able to pull this off.
Well, I just made a note on my calendar or in my notebook to mark the calendar to get up there this year for this. We have a company in Toronto, so I've got an easy reason to be there. I'll just have to time myself well.
Yeah, time it well. We're free and open to the public, so just mark it in your calendar, walk on in. I do warn you, though, between 10 and 2, it is super, super busy. So come prepared to walk a long distance in the parking lot.
Well, that's cool. I have been to the Skills USA competition. It was in Atlanta a couple of years ago, and I was there for that. And one of our companies, and in the Atlanta market, they were judging. We had some employees that were judges. So it was really cool to see kind of behind the scenes of how that went. You know, I'm so glad that I feel like we're coming back. We're like the phoenix rising from the ashes of taking all, especially trade in the States. You guys are ahead of us. We're slow to learn, apparently, on a lot of topics, but this one in particular, it has taken us getting into a real crunch from a labor standpoint for people to finally realize, like, oh, crap, we got to do something.
Well, we definitely know it's making a difference. What we see in, like, our sponsors have the opportunity to provide job offers to medalists, scholarships, and bursaries. Like, our ROI, our return on investment for sponsorship packages are unlike anybody else's because there is no event like us. We are so unique and different. So we have sponsors, everything from banks to massive manufacturing companies to construction industry, unions, colleges, you name it. So we have sponsors that range very widely. But it not only takes those 900 volunteers, it also takes sponsorship. It takes cash. It takes lending of equipment. We actually have one college who guts their entire classrooms and lends us every mill and lathe they own. We have a company who ships CNC machines up from the States to be able to make these opportunities happen. And it continues to grow and increase because you see those sponsors still coming to the table year after year. They know what it does for our economy, our industry, for our youth, for skilled trades. And also because we continue to see the competitors grow. And I say that as we had just shy of 2,700 competitors compete last year.
Wow.
Over those 75 contests. So we are anticipating potentially a little higher this year. We have a little bit of wiggle room and we're introducing one new contest this year. It's actually on the technology side, not the skilled trade side this year. But this year we're looking at introducing cybersecurity. Last year we introduced arborist and plastering and drywall systems.
Well, you know, you talk about cyber, it is infiltrating everything. So, you know, our technicians are out on the road working. We have roughly 4,500 workers, mobile skilled workers. And every one of them carries a device. And every one of them have to be aware of cyber threats because they're using their tablets and their phones and their computers for everything from doing their work all the way through tapping into the software on an air conditioner to control it. And I think cyber is an increasing, ever increasing thing to be aware of. So I think that's great. So in the States, technical school after high school, so it'd be, you know, after the 12th grade or grade 12, as you like to say, we're up 16% year over year for technical colleges and technical school enrollment. Do you have any idea of how you guys are moving on enrollment?
Well, so for us, we don't have dedicated technical schools. So here you've got universities and colleges as far as on that education piece, but then we also have union TDAs, training delivery agents. So on the technical side for skilled trades, our colleges and our union TDAs are both filtering through apprentices for skilled trades. So I don't have the number handy for that specifically, but we do have those two paths as far as going down that road on the educational side.
And Jennifer, wasn't there recently a new law passed where kids now in the ninth grade could start choosing their career path for education? Is that a new law that I remember reading about or earlier?
I have a feeling it's what I maybe mentioned earlier about the new courses for grade 9 and 10 technology where all students will take that. Okay. So they did, I believe you may also be talking about de-streaming for grade 9 students and how they choose courses in general. Okay. So there's been a couple of changes over the past few years for that curriculum.
You know, I think that's great because the earlier, you know, you can, for me, I don't think you can start too early. With the exposure, you know, of what construction jobs look like, what any trades job looks like with kids, because comic books work, you know, storybooks work, talking about these trades and having parents read about it. You know, I think it's just great the earlier you start. So that's ninth grade, I think, is awesome.
Well, they even classify it even earlier here. So here we tend to focus more on decisions being made in grade 7 and 8 and earlier, where a lot of students have already made up their mind by potentially the age of grade 9. So a lot of programming focus is also up here in grade 7 and 8 in doing those grassroots and looking at students earlier as well.
Do you think that the counselors, the guidance counselors in Canada, or maybe you can just speak to your province, but are they more open-minded about the trades versus college only that the state seems to be stuck in? Do you have any idea of the comparison?
I personally say yes, but I don't have any data to back that up. It's just my own personal experiences. Yeah. But I mean, one of those new items that was passed from our recommendation report was training available to guidance educators to learn more about skilled trades with funding. And with that, we launched 2 years ago the Guidance Educator Conference of just that, providing workshops and industry connections on skilled trades for guidance educators to offer more training and preparedness, especially for any of those who maybe weren't comfortable or didn't have a training or didn't know, or even if they did know. But I personally think that there's openness. I got very lucky when I started, and very neat coincidence, my guidance educator in high school, when I went to them about doing this huge 180, everybody always said to me, like, are you nuts? Like, you're an A-plus student going to university. And I got very lucky because the guidance educator who actually helped me through this happened to also actually be the guidance educator for my father more than 20 years before me at a different high school within the same city. So it was kind of neat because he already knew I was the daughter of a former student that he had. And like I said, my dad went into skilled trades. So he was very open and he helped me figure out my entire pathway. So I'm not going to speak ill of anyone within that realm, but I mean, I also have heard stories on the opposite.
Yeah. So my sister and my brother-in-law and nieces are all educators in public school here. And I've tried to pick their brains before, like, what kind of exposure do your counselors get to the trades? You know, are they privy to any courses or any, you know, how do they become aware of these opportunities? And it's very rare that they are. So I think part of our problem is we're not creating a path for our counselors to learn how much a need people are in the skills. And I think that's changing, but I think that kind of got us behind the eight ball a good bit.
Yeah, and there's a lot of updates here as well. So, I mean, skilled trades is being introduced into the curriculum at the elementary levels. It was added the other year into the science curriculum for high school students. So skilled trades are being introduced into other parts of the curriculum that have nothing to do with technology. Yeah. So you are seeing to be slipped in there. One of the other things our organization is very well known for is called the in-school presentations, whether that's virtually or literally in school. And we do 45 to 75 minute presentations about skilled trades, about the pathways and how to go about it. Because it's about that, it's about exploration and knowing about it. And that's one of the things that I always give advice on is like, how are you going to make a career decision without knowing the information? And I say that because in Ontario, 144 careers are registered as skilled trades in the province.
Wow.
In four different sectors. So knowing what those all are, there's some really neat ones that people didn't even know were like actual jobs that you would do an apprenticeship for those. But just being able to introduce what those are and being able to relate it, because every kid under the sun knows what a doctor is, a dentist, the garbage truck driver. Why? Because they either interact with them themselves or see them in their daily regular lives. You got to introduce what is in front of them in their lives, but they don't understand how it collates. And I say that because everybody uses a phone, a watch, alarm clock. How does your phone charge?
Yeah.
What is your alarm clock plugged into? So understanding that what affects literally their daily lives in charging or being plugged in is wired in your house through a residential electrician. Now, how does the power get into the house? That's from a power line technician. So those are two careers right there that are easy. Same thing as you noted, a toilet, a plumber. So careers that are right in front of your face, but you don't see the person doing it. So because you don't see the person doing it, you don't think about it as a career. Oh, the toilet's just there. You don't understand it. You don't think about that as a child. But the doctor, you physically visit and you see what the doctor does to you. So you understand that as a career option. So being able to put those pieces and connect those dots together allows children to understand what's out there. On top of that, take my trade for an example. I love using metaphors for everyone, not just kids. But I'm an industrial mechanic millwright. A lot of people don't know what that is. We're a doctor for machines. Greg, let's say you broke your leg playing soccer. You're going to go to the doctor. You're going to scream in pain. The doctor's going to touch your leg. He's going to assess it. He's going to determine, yeah, it's probably broken. I'm going to send you for an ultrasound, an x-ray, maybe an MRI. You go for those tests. They determine, yep, you broke it. You need surgery. You're now going to go to the surgeon. The surgeon might deem that you need a steel plate and some screws, and you're going to need some staples. He's going to fix you. Then you're going to go into physio, and they're going to help you get yourself back to as close to normal working order as possible. As a millwright, though, the machine is blinking with an alarm, or maybe you heard a loud crash. You have to troubleshoot and diagnose, except you can't ask it questions. It is just going to give you the answer. You have to understand the programming. You have to be able to read through it. You have to be able to do tests and figure that out through your training. But let's determine you did a bunch of tests like the MRI and the ultrasound, and you determined the gearbox is broken. You now become the surgeon. You're the doctor. You troubleshooted. You did the tests. Now you're the surgeon. You've got to get into that machine. You've got to rip the gearbox out. You've got to rebuild the gearbox. And then you've got to install the gearbox back in. Now you're the surgeon. Jump to the last step, the physiotherapy. You're not just going to give the machine back to production and say, here you go. No, you're going to test it. And you're going to make sure, is it in proper working order? Does everything line up the way it was supposed to? Is it actually working the way that it was supposed to? Making sure you also made no mistakes. And you're going to get it back to working order to get back to production. So a millwright is that piece of the healthcare system. We are the doctors, but for machines.
I love that analogy.
Thank you.
I may steal that.
Give me credit though. Steal it, but give me credit. But that's the key component that's really missing for a lot of jobs. Forget about skilled trades for the moment. A lot of jobs in general, people just don't know what they are or what they do by the simplicity of just a title. So if you don't have anything to push you and intrigue you to want to learn more about the title, you're never going to unless somebody helps you out.
Well, that's what you said, 144 trades that are registered
within the province.
144. So think about that. You know, I could name 44 probably, but how many more? And then when you would tell me the other 100, I'd go, yeah, that makes sense, because somebody has to do that and somebody has to understand how to do that. And every time, I'm so fascinated by life. I'm 60 years old and I still feel like I'm 5, because I'm always finding out stuff. Like, you know, you go to a plant, go to a factory, and then here comes this piece of something and you're like, I never thought about somebody having to make that component to fit into this machine, but it happens every day. You know, last night, my wife and I were flying home and we were seated apart from each other. And the young lady sitting beside me, she was an industrial maintenance technician for BMW. And she was just telling me a little bit about her job and how she did it. And I'm like, I never even freaking thought about that, but it's a career. She loves it. She's been doing it for 8 years. She works on robotics. She works on PLCs. And then to your point, when the robot arm or what have you, some mechanism is broken, she repairs that and the program. So spot on. But Jennifer, this is fascinating. I could talk to you about 4 more hours, but I don't know that our I don't know if our listeners could hang in there that long. Tell us more about how people can get in touch with Skills Ontario, where they can find out more about it, because more people need to know about these opportunities so that they can plagiarize the idea locally, so they can start talking more about skilled trades earlier to their friends, family, their Sunday school, whatever works to get the message out. So how can people find out more about Skills Ontario, some of the great stuff you're doing?
I'd say first stop shop would be our website at www.skillsontario.com. We're also on all social media channels. We can easily be reached out to at info@skillsontario.com. So you can reach out to that email address and ask what you're looking for, and they will direct you to the correct department. So we're always happy to answer questions, help, talk to new teachers, sponsors, competitors, groups, support everybody in going down the same path as us.
And if one was to find themselves in Toronto on the 5th and 6th of May, how would they want to go about volunteering to help up there? How does that work?
If you'd like to volunteer for the competition, currently right now, you can email volunteers@skillsontario.com to reach out through there. We have a few openings right now within a few select contests. So each of them have, to become a judge, you obviously have to be licensed or have experience within that background. So we are on the hunt for a few contests right now, requiring some judges, but we also have marshal positions and some others. So depending on what you're looking to do, you can always reach out and we can see if there's an opening.
I'm probably good for traffic directing for people parking. That's probably...
You'd be really surprised. When we tell people that we are Canada's largest skilled trades event, just one of the largest. So we're actually the largest. So the Toronto Congress Center is one of the 3 largest convention centers in the province. And we are the largest event that they have.
Wow.
So it's massive. It truly is a wow factor. And everybody always says that when they visit for the first time. I can talk to you till I'm blue in the face. I can give you metrics till I'm blue in the face and show you video snippets. But until you're there, I promise you, you've likely never experienced anything like it before in your life.
All right. Well, on that tease note, we're going to wrap this up because I don't think we could top that. I have been to that building and for the PDAC, the mining show, which is incredible, but I can't wait to come, and I'm coming, and I'm going to bring some of our folks from Toronto with me.
Well, here you go, Greg. If you've been there before, we use the entire South Building, all three halls, plus every single meeting room. We even use a massive chunk outside. We have a mobile crane contest, renewable energies of solar and wind, and we have a power line technician contest where we actually drill into the boulevards and set up our own power line poles and sections. We also use the ballroom and a very large section out of the North Building as well. We take up a lot. We want to take up the whole North Building, but we need a little bit more support on that end to be able to do it.
Well, this podcast could put you over. This may do it.
Oh, well, I am very excited. If anybody wants to come forward and help us as a partner, very excited to do that. The goal is to expand and provide as many opportunities for Ontario youth to help skilled trades and our economy and industries.
Awesome. Well, Jennifer, I really appreciate you taking the better part of an hour to tell us about what's going on up there with your great program. And I love that y'all are helping the youth and helping your country and helping the world, because we need more skilled trades people, workers, advocates, you name it. We need them. So thank you. Thank you for the time. Everybody who has taken a little bit of time out of your life to listen to this, I really do appreciate it. It's not taken for granted. Skilled trades are so important. Yeah, we're listening to this on a device that requires power, and power came to you somehow. Air conditioning, welding, iron workers. I mean, God, there's so many different, 144 in Canada, yeah. Different ways to be.
And never forget about the service sector. Don't forget our bakers and our cooks and our hairstylists.
And the chefs, yeah, absolutely.
Early childhood educator is a registered skilled trade up here.
Well, there you go. And God knows I needed more of that as a kid. So thank you, everyone, for your time. You can always find more of the Straight Outta Crumpton content at gregcrumpton.com, Apple or Spotify. Look for Straight Outta Crumpton, or just about anywhere you get podcasts. We have, through osmosis, settled into those crevices. So we're proud to have you. So I'm excited. I've got to get out of here and go jump around and grab my tool bag and run up and down the street in excitement. Jennifer, I want to thank you again for joining Skills Ontario. Best of luck. I look forward to seeing you this year. And for Jennifer, for Greg Crumpton, we are out of here for the day, and we will see you on the next episode. Thank you very much.